On this episode of the iFilmmaker podcast, we're shooting a docuseries. Welcome back to another episode of the iFilmmaker podcast. My name is Ariel Martinez. Glad to be back with you guys. Today we have a fun episode. My good friend, Mr. Cervitelli, Anthony Cervitelli, but it's Mr. Cervitelli to you guys. We had him on the show because he recently just finished an awesome docuseries over with Fox Sports. Ever heard of it? So basically, he had to go through a lot with his team making this docuseries, and it was very, very interesting. And as you guys well know, I'm a documentary filmmaker myself, so I had a lot of questions for him on this one. And I like it when we can have on guests and I can ask questions for myself to learn as well. So this is a fun one for me in particular. So I'm excited. I'm excited for you guys to check this one out. I just want to remind you guys that we did do this one live on our Instagram. So we're not on YouTube anymore. We're on Instagram live doing all of our episodes. They're only on there for 24 hours. So if you're not already following the iFilmmaker podcast over on Instagram, I encourage you guys to do so. To basically, you can engage with our conversations, ask your questions, and it's just a good time. And also, you can catch some behind the scenes stuff that basically get cut out in the final edit of every episode. So that stuff did happen on this episode, so it's a fun one. In addition to that, I also want to give a big shout out to our first official sponsor for this podcast, and it's The Music Bed. And I want to thank you guys in advance for supporting our sponsors, because that's how you can support this show, by supporting our sponsors, letting them know that we're sending you there. So I want to give a big shout out to our first sponsor, is The Music Bed. Find the perfect song for your films with a highly curated roster featuring hundreds of artists, bands, and composers. I use The Music Bed myself for my films, for my podcast, and I love their selection. It's a wide variety of selections that I can choose from. Everything is high quality. I usually don't have to go too far or wait too long to find the song that I like to listen to or that I need or want for my film. And it's just right there, and I really do appreciate that. And real composers, not some generic music. So thank you to The Music Bed for sponsoring us. And as an iFilmmaker listener, you guys get your first month of subscription for free, or 20% off your single song purchase. Just use the promo code iFilmmaker at checkout. Anyways, with all that being said, let's just get to our conversation with Mr. Cervitelli. So great that you're back on the show. Love that you're with us. And first of all, what do you think of this new format? Like, last time you were here, we were on YouTube doing that whole Google Hangouts thing. And I'm going to keep mentioning this thing just because I think it's very, very interesting. And like I told you earlier, I'm not complaining, honestly, because yes, it was nicer to have that Google Hangouts platform. But I don't know, it felt like much more work than needed for an audio show, you know? So I don't know. What are your thoughts? What do you think about this?
Yeah, this setup was pretty simple. I felt a little more mobile. I didn't have to worry about lighting. Exactly. It only being here, I would be on here for 24 hours, and then there's no video version of this, right?
Right.
I don't know, made me feel a little better about it. Doesn't have to be lit perfectly. I mean, look, I'm still probably a little hot right here, but I don't really care. You know, let's just get it out there. Let's get the content out there.
Exactly.
And keep the audio live, or not live, but, you know, live on the internet somewhere.
Exactly.
And I think that's great.
That's awesome.
I mean, on our end, and for anyone else who's doing podcasts, they'll know.
Yeah.
This is way, way easier.
That's cool. So, awesome. No, yeah, no, totally.
I don't get mad about that.
100% agree. This is way easier than setting up all the lights and all this stuff. And
I mean, look, I'm a quality, I know the internet right now is, and actually I think Gary Vee just put up an episode, which I'd love to watch, and it says something like the internet has decided it's like quality versus quantity.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a huge quality guy, because as a company, I want to provide the best quality. But when it comes to the internet and just getting content out there, quantity is more important, which kills me inside, but it's so true. You know, it's true, and it's like, let's just get it out there so people can watch and listen, because time goes by fast, and let's get them more stuff to
100%
to latch onto. So,
and I think
I just got to accept it, I guess.
I think the more we do this stuff, I think the more, not only podcasting, but our work, our videography, our filmmaking, and storytelling, we realize more that it's really the content, like the story, that matters, right?
Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, we're doing all this work, and you know, we're getting paid you know, relatively well, and we're not using Reds, we're not using like the best cameras out there, and it's more really about the story, you know. And I realize, me personally, I realize that more and more and more, you know. And yeah, I think that that's becoming more and more apparent. So
yeah.
But anyways, you've had a small hiatus from the podcast, and you've been pursuing a lot of work. It's been fantastic, and it's been great. Tell me what you've been up to since the podcast, and you've just been all over the place. I've been seeing you, following you, and obviously we've been in contact. Tell me what's been going on with you.
Well, I mean, all work stuff, obviously. I've connected with an old friend, and she's been able to bring a lot of work my way, which has been, you know, a godsend in a way.
Sure.
That, you know, a lot of the times people, you could promote yourself as much as you want and advertise and do whatever you want to do. But I mean, for me, most, if not almost all of my work has come from just people I've known through the years, whether it's a contact through production, whether it's a contact through baseball when I played previously, or just a friend from a long time ago. It's just been, you know, people go and do different things, and time goes by, and I'm 36 now, so, you know, college and high school was 15, 20 years ago, so those people come back into your lives randomly and, like, bring a job. You just never know. There's no way of telling how you're going to land things. As much as you want to just, you know, obviously advertising is definitely a way to land jobs. It's the way to do it. You know, you're going to spend money, you're going to get money back for that, but there's no right or wrong way, and a lot of my stuff has come through just contacts over the years, and like some have come back into my life and provided me with jobs, and it's been really nice. And a lot of it right now is documentary work, which is funny because it's not something. I mean, look, 5 years ago or so, I'd say, you know, documentary work was still passion projects. You know, like, you're not making much money off of them, but because of all these streaming platforms now, you can. Yeah. There's big money. There's big money in documentary work, and a lot of it has come my way, thankfully. So I've been doing a lot of doc stuff, still doing a lot of corporate stuff, and most of it is like internal work, which is good and bad. I mean, it pays and it's consistent for the most part, but no one ever sees it. So it's like, you know, I do this stuff because I like to entertain, and it's really weird when I have to make things that I can't put out there. You know,
right.
So a lot of that work is corporate stuff, but again, it pays the bills and it keeps things going. So I got to do them. And then, the doc stuff has been coming well. And, a lot of them are still in production or post-production, and I can't even speak about exactly what they are.
Right.
Worked on me with one.
Yeah. Yeah.
That we can't talk about.
Yeah. So. No, I know. We're going to, you know, we'll mention in very vague terms some stuff, but obviously things that we can't give out.
On top of that, so like, there are things we can't speak, you know, detailed about, but there are some things that we can, which one I just finished and I'm really happy with, and really happy with the fact that I was able to put it out immediately. You know, it was, I did a 100-year anniversary docuseries that went on Fox Sports Online on the internet, and then Facebook Watch as well, and then their YouTube and all that, and it's gotten good attention, but it was a ton of work, and I'm sure that's what we're going to talk a little bit about today.
Yeah, totally.
But it was cool to, again, produce something that immediately was able to get out there, and a 10-part docuseries on the web these days is something I think people would, it's good for the resume, right?
If that's awesome.
as a person or a company, it was really good to be able to produce something at that level, to get out there with that notoriety that quickly, was probably one of the coolest projects I've ever done.
That's phenomenal that you're getting in all this doc work. And, you know, I've been pursuing documentary, not because of the money, because you think about it, like, if you think out there, what gets the most money? I don't think people would ever say or even think documentary. You know, I just personally enjoy it a lot more. I think I have more of a passion for that kind of work. I've always been drawn to it. It's what I've always done ever since, even when I only did videos for my church. It's just a lot of documentaries, testimonials, B-roll stuff, you know, putting a story together, getting a reaction because of that story, I think that's all just, I just love all that stuff. And on top of the whole thing is the fact that I don't have to kind of rely on this big crew to get it done. You know, I can do it all myself. So with that being said, what have you learned in this whole experience? You're now, okay, so you put out a docuseries, which is really what I want to talk about today. You've done other documentaries before. How different is it putting together a docuseries? Like, what factors did you consider when preparing for a project like this?
Well, first of all, it came to us with literally a month in the amount of time to produce from start to finish. And to give you a little more background on the project, it was 100 year celebration. So it was a dirt track modified, or dirt car modified racetrack in Middletown, New York. And the first race was on August 15th, 1919. So August 15th, 2019 was 100 years since the first race. Wow. This track has been around prior to that. It was a horse track. So there was a lot of history, obviously, 100 plus years of history. Right. And when we started the project, when we confirmed that we were on it, there was 1 month until the date of the release of the 10th episode. So our plan was to release an episode every day up until the 100th anniversary race. So 9 straight days. And then the race, the celebration was 3 days. It actually started on the 15th. Then the 16th, there was a race as well. And the 17th was actually the centennial race, which technically was 100 years and 2 days. But that was the actual 100-year race that they were giving out $100,000 to the winner, which is like the biggest prize in dirt track modified history. So there was just this huge build to it and a 3-day event. So we lined up 9 straight episodes to get up to the 17th and wanted to put out the 10th episode on the 18th. So that means 3 days of footage turned around when this race is ending at like midnight or 1 a.m., trying to turn that around for the next day. We'll get to that and how that went. The idea was to put out 10 straight days, 10 straight episodes. They were originally going to be in the 7-minute range. They ended up being about 10 minutes. It was 143 minutes, 103 minutes of content, an hour and 43 minutes. It was a lot. It was a lot of content.
Wow.
And we had guys working round the clock. There were just so many things to consider, right? You have what are we going to shoot? How many interviews? And it's going to be mostly interviews, right? We'll shoot some races and get some B-roll, but it's a lot of our archival stuff. We have to go digging. We have to find out what pictures people might have, what videos people might have, what the track knows, who are the historians that could like confirm the stuff we're talking about, you know, and make sure we're telling history correctly. And imagine trying to do that. The release of the first episode was 2.5 weeks from the day we signed the contract to do this. So in about a week, we had to try to consume 100 years of history as best we could, archive as much footage, photos, any information, news articles as we could, and start building a story and start interviewing people. So, and we learned more and more as we interviewed people. So it was hard. The first week of interviews, we did 33 interviews within the 2 weeks. We were actually, you know, they leaked into, I think the last interview was done maybe a day or two before the first episode was released. So we're slipping people in and they like fit better into some of the later episodes. But it was,
a nightmare.
I had this board of like trying to figure out how things were going to get done when there were 5 editors on it trying to like, again, get all this stuff together while some of us were out shooting. It ended up being a total of, 9 crew as far as like producers, shooters, directors, whatever, editors. We had a narrator that was just the most helpful. We would be recording stuff at like 3 a.m. I sent him home with some gear and told him how to set it up because I couldn't be with him all the time. I was like, dude, we're going to need a line fixed. We're going to need some lines for this one added, you know?
Right.
So there was that to deal with. And then we had our historian from the track that was kind of on call, like, hey, you know, we just finished this cut at 3 a.m. We got to put it out at 9 a.m. Can you watch it to make sure everything's right? Because if not, we got to fix it.
Yeah,
it was nuts, man. I mean, everything came down to the last minute, like just trying to pump these things out. It was an excessive amount of content in that amount of time, but it was fun to do.
How did that kind of steer your project and the process that you normally take to do documentaries, right? Yeah, so you have your normal process.
Gotcha. Yep.
But because this fast turnaround time, you're going to have to change a few things, right?
Yes, for sure.
So what changed?
It changed as it happened. Like I tried to plan as much as I could. But
you can't. You have a week.
It was impossible. It was impossible. I mean, as much as I really
couldn't even plan for this.
It was hard. I mean, I did as best I could. I plotted out what I thought guys would need to finish an episode and who can do mm-hmm. it. And I mean, I have paperwork on paperwork of like planning because I didn't right. think there was any other way to complete it if it wasn't really planned out as best as possible. But I mean, that changed day by day. I wouldn't say most projects are like that, but you know how things are in production. They, sure. they change. It could change every day. This was more intense on that end of like when things were getting done. I think I had a really good plan as far as what I thought was going to happen. I wasn't far off in my estimate of how long it would take with our original amount of minutes that I thought we were going to produce, but that mm-hmm. got upped by over 30 minutes of content. So sure. Even looking back, if it was like a day-by-day estimation of how long I think it was going to take, I was actually pretty spot on, even with the 103 minutes as opposed to a 75 minutes, which I thought it was going to be. Wow. I was still spot on with the amount of time I thought it was going to take. The only problem is we had to squeeze 30 more minutes of production into the same amount of time. So, right. you know, it was just a matter of getting more people on or Dang. Just working longer hours. I mean, the hours were, for me at least, you know, guys were working 10, 12, 15-hour days.
Right, me
and one of the other guys were sleeping in the office and rotating our naps just to, like, get these things done on time. So it was no joke of, like, how much work it was. And, you know,
I don't blame you, man.
I would like to plan even better next time if possible. It's not even planning better. It's more so, like, make sure we have the money to get another editor or two. I could have, but I would have made a little less money. So I was like, you know, I just went for it.
Why did it take so long to get this project up and running? Like, why was it them coming last minute to just want to do this? Or
yeah, I mean, you know, I can't really speak to their decisions, but, you know, I think it had been an idea that had been brewing.
What I mean is, like, is this something that they have been planning and for some reason they were like backed up or something like that? Or
yeah, something like that. I mean, dragging their feet or, you know,
got it.
can't make a decision, whatever it was, the final decision didn't come through till about a month ago. So, you know, we knew about it and it wasn't something, it's not like, you know, even if 3 months ahead we knew about it, which right. would have been a great time to start. Sure. If they're not going to confirm that amount of work, I'm not starting it. You know, there's so much work to be done. It's like, where do you start if it's not right. for sure a paid project? Because you're going to do a lot for nothing if they decide not to do it. So we didn't do anything until Insane. It was like on paper. All right, we're doing sure. this. And then it was go time.
So let's say you did have, well, let's say they gave you like 3 months, right? To do the whole thing or whatever. All the time you need basically is what I'm trying to get to. What would change? What would you do different?
I don't think it would change as far as like really the outcome of the project or even the strategy of doing it, but it would have been more sleep and it would have been, okay. That's honestly the biggest change. Like what we did was no different than we would have done. It would just been spread out sure. more. And I think we would have gotten a little more detailed and like story. Sure. The story would have been a little bit different because we would have picked up on more things. Again, trying to squeeze all that and learn all that in that much time, you learn as you go because people mm-hmm. you're doing these interviews and people say things you didn't know, mm-hmm. and then people watch them and be like, "Oh, you forgot about this." And it's like, well, if we had time to kind of put out some feelers and say, hey, watch this. What are we missing? What is wrong? You know,
sure.
That would have been the things that would have been different. So it pretty much would have been like we get a cut done and we could have sent it out to 3 or 4 people and had a week to make sure we got it right as opposed to 10 hours. you know, seriously, like that's the difference. And like, you, what a difference that would be, because people could have said, oh yeah, that's a great story. I remember when this, let's talk about that. So,
I mean, it's no secret that the more time you spend on a project, the better it gets. You know, like you have a lot more time to get very meticulous on the small things like audio, maybe longer interviews, coloring, all that stuff. Like the more time you spend on it, the better it becomes. Speaking of interviews, how long were the interviews? You said you had a ton of interviews.
Yeah, man.
I can't imagine they were hour-long interviews.
Well, some of them. Some definitely were. It depended. It was completely dependent on like who the person was and what we were speaking to them about, right? So if it was kind of our historian, per se, we interviewed him about 100 years. It's like, hey, take us back as far as you can.
Wow.
And talk about the pre-50s and the war era, you know, pre-war era. Mm-hmm. Sure. And then what happened as these stock cars started developing in the 50s and then like this. And just literally going through the decades and talking about different moments. So that is long. There's some guys that might be younger and they're not going to have a clue about anything prior to like the 80s or 90s. Mm-hmm. So we might talk about like their first experience at the track when they were growing up in the 80s or 90s, but then it's like all current stuff. So I would say the interviews went from anywhere from a minimum of 15 minutes to 15 to 20 minutes, and some of them went over an hour. So they varied quite a bit, but on the average, I would say half hour easy on the average.
Yeah.
And we transcribed everything via like an internet transcription service, which was all computerized.
What do you use, by the way?
I used Trint.
Really?
Yeah. So it's good. I don't really have much experience with others besides Rev.
Right.
Okay. I didn't need somebody doing it. I didn't need like a person. I didn't need to pay that much to have a person doing it.
Right. No, of course not.
So Trint is like $15 an hour of, you know, of content. So like an hour, if I send in an hour long clip, it's $15. And it does a pretty good job. It's pretty humorous. It sends back some really funny transcriptions that aren't even close. Sometimes you just had to learn like what it was. For example, there's someone with the last name Ricky, and it's spelled R-I-C-C-I, but they would spell it R-I-C-K-Y. So you just had to like figure out a couple things, because if you start searching for Ricky, how it's really spelled, you're not going to find it. So, you had to worry about that.
For that part, just sorry to interrupt you. You should look into Temi. T-E-M-I.
Okay.
It's really accurate. It's really good. It separates it labels who's talking.
Nice.
And I don't know how it works.
You can, yeah.
But it says, person one, and then this is everything they said, person two. And obviously that's the interviewer and interviewee. But the best part, it's 10 cents a minute, which is crazy, like something like that. Is it 10 cents a minute?
So it's $6 an hour.
$6 an hour, which is pretty good and super accurate. And then you could download the Word document, you can email it to anybody, share it with somebody, and
it do like SRTs and stuff for captions?
No idea what that is.
No, so there's a file. It's like, you know, just like you're saying, you could pump out a text file or a Word doc.
It's SRTs. Meant for video. There are many other options. I'm sure that's one of them.
Yeah.
As you play back the video, because you upload the regular video, it'll play it back and it highlights the words that are being said in real time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you, you know, and then you can go in correcting everything. As you type, it'll stop automatically. It's a ridiculous service.
Nice.
Not a subscription. It's like 10 cents a minute and you have access to everything, which is pretty cool. Anyways, I feel that they're pretty, pretty amazing. Haven't seen other ones.
I'd love to look at different ones because I use it fairly often now, especially with this doc work and transcribing interviews. But I've used it for the SRT files too, which literally pump out whatever you see in text. It pumps out into a file that puts it into the captions in Premiere. So like it'll pop up all the captions, and you can go in there and correct them. And
that's interesting.
It's pretty cool and
I'm
simple.
I'm pretty sure they do that because it's a.
I would imagine they do.
Yeah, it's a video based service.
Yeah. Yeah, most of them do. I can't imagine it wouldn't. So I've had to do that. That's how I started with Trint, because I needed some captioning stuff and I didn't feel like typing it all out myself.
Right.
Or I started to, and then we're like, wait a minute, let's try this, because it took forever. I mean, it was like another full pass of like sound and color type passes when you're trying to do captions and make sure everyone's saying everything right. It's like so much work.
Right.
But I think if I were to suggest those, is Temi is like a computerized program that like that transcribes it, right?
Right.
Not a person.
So no, it's a computerized. It's
I really would good. Recommend, and I haven't done this yet because I haven't needed to do it again. But once I need to do captions again, I think I would pay the little bit extra to have a person transcribe it to make sure it's correct. Yeah, because it's not going to nail everything, and then you have to go in and correct everything anyways.
Gotcha.
It's already in place as far as timing, which is great, but like when you physically have to go in and watch every single one of them, which you would do anyways, but like watch and correct, I'd rather pay a few extra dollars and save that time. I think it'd be like if you had to map out your time and how much you're getting paid, I think it's worth it.
Got it.
To like have someone make sure it's correct.
They do export SRT.
Yeah.
I know. Awesome. But yeah, Temi. I mean that does make sense. There have been some times where I'm transcribing and the interviewer doesn't really speak too well grammatically even. Mm-hmm. Like they'll be in the middle of a sentence and then they'll go off onto a different topic like completely. And that's where it kind of gets confusing, especially in the grammar version. But everything else I would say is pretty spot on in terms of periods and apostrophes and all that stuff. It's really, really well done. But anyways, sorry, continuing on we're talking about, you know, you would transcribe it, the interviews and whatnot.
Yeah, I mean, so that was the only way we could possibly find stuff with any sort of speed because these things become, you know, again, half hour plus most of the time to watch through them. It's just, we didn't have that time. We literally didn't have the time to watch. It's like, we got to start cutting. We got to start cutting, getting this footage in, and the best way was to send those out. And they usually took about as long as the videos were, probably a little shorter. So if it was a half hour clip, it would come back in less than a half hour transcribed. So that was helpful for us to be able to find stuff and search out what people are saying. Because, you know, as much as we could try to take notes during the interviews, you know, we didn't always have a PA on hand to like take down every note. It was me doing the interview and maybe someone shooting, and it's like we have to remember or jot something down real quick. And we would, but you know, when I'm focused on what's being said and the other guy's focused on like making sure these cameras are framed up and in focus, like you kind of lose track of what's even being said, unless my memory holds onto it, which is not very good. I need to take notes. I'm that kind of guy. So
what cameras did you end up using, and did you do multiple cameras for the interviews?
Yeah, we used FS7, so I have a second FS7 now. So we're just doubling up on that with everything. And I don't think we even needed, I don't think we had a third camera ever for an interview. Right. And even on the shoot days, we had two guys running around with FS7. So if anything, we're using like an A7S to do some like time lapses, or we threw GoPros in a couple cars. But we were able to get by with using mostly just the FS7s, which came out great. I love that camera, man. It's still one of my favorites.
No, that camera is great. She's trying to jump on me. The camera is great. I'm loving mine. It's crazy versatile.
Yeah.
Crazy versatile.
I still think, I mean, we've talked about this probably a year ago, if not. Right. And I think I bought my first one almost 4 years ago now. And I still think like bang for your buck. It's one of the best, if not out there, but I bet you there's some things coming close. But I'm saying though, like again, versatility wise, as far as it can go on your shoulder, it can go on a rig. It has internal NDs. It has internal XLR, like preamps that are pretty good. It just all around. And like, you know, you could shoot in a log format. You could shoot in a custom mode that just kind of pumps out something you want right away. It's really hard to beat. I have not found something that beats it on a consistent, like everyday use basis. Yeah.
Speaking of gear, today, side note, today I just saw and I posted it on Film School, was announced the Canon C500.
Yeah, I saw a
camera that's been out for like 10 years. It's been out for like 10 years. Mark II.
Does a 500 Mark I even exist anymore? Do they sell it anymore?
I think they do. I don't know. It shoots 4K externally only.
I just don't.
Yeah. So, well, the Mark II now does, and here's some gear talk. This is obviously off topic. The Mark II now does the, it does 4K. It actually does 5.9K, really like 6K. up to 60 frames per second, and 4K up to 60 frames per second in mm-hmm. Cinema Raw Lite.
Okay.
Canon Cinema Raw Lite. And then in 2K or HD, it'll do 120 frames with the crop.
Okay.
Which is a lot of people are
very, what size is the sensor?
It's a full frame sensor.
Okay.
So yeah. Oh, by the way, it's $15,000.
Oh, jeez.
Exactly. All That's right. What has people more like upset. It's just, come on, guys. All right, guys. It sucks to get bogged down in the editing process while you try to track down the soundtrack for your film. I've been there, so has the team at The Music Bed. In fact, that's the entire reason why they've built their platform. They've made it easier than ever for you to find the song that you're looking for. It's intuitive and easy to use. Browse and search indie artists, bands, and incredible composers like Ryan Tybert and Chad Lawson. Their roster is growing every day with tens of thousands of songs ranging from cinematic and electric to indie rock and hip hop. And with their single song licenses or subscription, they give you unlimited downloads. There's something for every type of filmmaker. To create your free account and learn more, go to themusicbed.com. You can use my affiliate link in the description notes for this podcast. Plus, as an iFilmmaker listener, they're giving you 1 month of subscription for free or 20% off a single song license. Just enter the promo code iFilmmaker when you check out. Now back to our show. What would you say in terms of the storytelling, right? So this is one of the things that, because I'm always back and forth of, I have a couple of projects that I'm putting down on paper.
Mm-hmm.
I think the biggest trick for me is, I don't know if I'm going to go with a regular feature doc or turn it into a series, right?
Yeah.
And it's basically a book that I want to turn into a documentary. But I don't know if I should go the feature route or if I should go the series route. And if I go the series route, what would that look like? You know, would I do it by chapter?
Right.
But I've seen documentaries, right? And I can see docuseries as well. And I know that at the end, I mean, there has to be some sort of luring of the audience to watch the following.
Some payoff.
Yeah, some to watch the following episode. Because otherwise, it'll die out quick. And that's the part where, like, what would that look like, you know? Did you experience something like that in the sense that how did every episode end? And did you have to try and draw them in to...
Well, this was a fair. I think this was an easier one to make docuseries immediately and know that it could be episodic because we broke it down into like time periods.
Sure.
So you know when the 70s came to an end and there was like this new driver emerging that dominated in the 80s.
Sure.
We hinted at that and gave this like epic, you know, narration over this great music that just like you know just like led you into like, oh wow, that's what the 80s is about, like I can't wait to watch it type thing, you know?
Sure.
So we broke down the first six episodes into time periods, and then the next three were more standalone, but they have a like their Super Bowl of sorts called Eastern States. So we did like an Eastern States history and went over like some big wins and big moments in Eastern States history. We did legendary drivers, and we went over some of the best, you know, kind of a top 10 per se of the best drivers in the history of the track. And the other one was we called 100 Years and Counting, and it was more so like people's feel good stories and things that they've experienced, like just personal experiences and like what the track has like in store moving forward. And then the 10th episode was the recap of the 100 year race. So right out the gate, we knew this was going to be episodic, being trying to cover 100 years. Like, how do we break this down? You know, so, and I think, so to answer your question, maybe this answers it or helps you like think about it, is first of all, the content is going to determine if it can be episodic or not. I think if you can go episodic on the back end, if you're trying to sell this thing or distribute it somewhere, episodic is just more content. So, so for someone to be like, hey, I'm going to buy 8 episodes off you that I can air once every week for 2 months, as opposed to let me buy an hour doc off you that I can throw up once and that's it. I think episodic sells better right now.
Sure.
Just because people want to see stuff in shorter bites and see it more consistently. So if you can do that, I recommend it. But otherwise, I mean, it's got to be the right content, though. You can't just break something up just to break something up.
Right. Did you guys know that, like, when they offered you the job, did they ask you to do an episodic, or is that a choice that you guys made after?
No, it was kind of from the get-go. That was their plan. Sure. And you know, I was on board with that pretty simply.
What would it have looked like if it was a feature? Would it have been harder to work or easier? Or
yeah, it would have been harder because it would have been a lot different. I mean, how do you go from after doing the 100 years into like a history of a certain event and then the best drivers? I mean, I guess you could have. You'd kind of be breaking up a flow, I think. Maybe you can mix that in, but it's hard. It was hard for us, even in the way we did it, to talk about the best drivers after we did each decade, and we mention and talk about the best drivers in those decades. Now we have to yet again put together a piece that talks about all the same drivers in a different way. So like to put that into one piece, I think would have been even harder. We were able to just like kind of compartmentalize some things and say, all right, we're going to talk about what they did in this decade really well, but then in the legendary piece, we'll talk about what they did in their full career really well. So we were able to break it up that way. So I think this content itself was just a very easy decision to be like, this is episodic. This is no problem. So that was not a really hard decision process for this project itself, but
sure.
I think for others, it can be very difficult because I have another that we would like to make episodic, but it just doesn't seem like it's going to work. It's not enough to hook people to come back, but it could be a good 1 hour doc, you know? So I think it completely depends on your content.
Yeah. It depends on the story, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how true. It can be structured. Yeah.
How much footage did you get in the, what was it, two, a week or a month?
A month total. We shot quite a bit the last 3 days, technically, when shooting all these races, you know, when they did the centennial race.
Sure.
We have a lot of footage because of interviews. It's not the largest project I've ever did as far as footage size, because like a lot of the stuff we're doing for the archival stuff is very small because we're ripping stuff off the internet or like it's old footage. It's very small, you know. So we actually just exceeded – we had to get a second drive, so we just went over 8 terabytes. I think it was like 10 terabytes. But, I mean, there's another project I'm working on right now that's 30 terabytes. So I wouldn't even compare this to anything extremely huge because we had to capture so much in so little time. So it really wasn't really a ton of footage, and all the stuff we captured currently was all very new stuff that we could only use in certain episodes. Like we couldn't use new footage really – in the 60s, like it just didn't make sense.
Right.
So, of course. So, a lot of that footage was just used later in the like 2000s, 2010s, and some of the moving forward episodes. So it was easy to break all that up. But we did ingest a lot of stuff at the end with little time. And let's talk about that. So I was saying episode 10 was, you know, supposed to be turned around the next day. The centennial race had a rain delay. First of all, it didn't start till like 8 p.m. It had a rain delay. There were some actually like rule issues because they started the race and it rained and there was a big crash. And it's actually really interesting. People want to go watch the 10th
episode.
When
was it scheduled to start? You said it started at 8.
I think it was scheduled to start at 8. It was 160 laps.
Okay.
And laps take in the 20 to 25 second range. So I can't figure that out that quick, but it was, you know, it's an easy couple hours like, you know, the cautions. Like, cautions are what determine how long it really ends up being if people crash and stuff. So there was a big crash pretty early because it started raining, like, almost as soon as the race started in lap 12. And then there was a big issue with, like, they shouldn't have started the race because they knew the rain was coming. And guys, like, brought their car into the pit because they said they could, but then that's against the rules. But yet they said they could. There's, like, literally, like, huge arguments. Great content for us because, like, people are in the pits, like in each other's faces, like about to throw blows. So it was really fun to
go
to
in
shoot.
There and start instigating to get good drama.
Dude, we had guys right in there, like, we were yelling, you know, everyone's yelling and we're getting interviews and it's like, what do you feel right now? Like, you know, it's like, it was cool. It was really fun to capture and like cut up. But again, we have this thing that's supposed to start at 8. I think it even was delayed to start because of the rain. They started, it rained. There's delays because of the rain. The track has to dry. There's arguments. I mean, I don't even remember what time it started going again, but the race didn't finish till after midnight. I mean, it might even been like one, I think it was beyond 1 o'clock that it finished.
Wow.
Because we didn't get out of there till 4 a.m. So like we shoot the race, but then you got to shoot like Victory Lane, and then we're getting interviews with the winners and the teams and they're celebrating. So like we shot till at least, I think like 3 a.m. and we're trying to ingest this stuff at 4K. Like these are, you know, full big files.
Yeah.
Ingesting it while like we're trying to like clean up, because we had this like container, like you know, like those one of those metal containers that they turned into like a production studio for us, which is really nice to work out of while guys are shooting, and we have cards coming in and we're trying to get them all in. And I think we finally went to bed at like 6 a.m. got up at like 9 trying to start to cut this thing, which they wanted by 7 p.m. which is, I mean, pretty much impossible. And it didn't happen. We finished about, I think, 26 hours later. So the next night at 9 o'clock was actually done. And it didn't air until the next day after that. So the planned release of the 10th episode on the 18th didn't happen until the 20th. So that was our only quote-unquote hiccup, but it was an almost impossible task. So they ended up still putting it up, and there was no problem. And it was a good episode, so I'm glad we got to like work it out and not just throw something together.
And that was episode 10, right?
That was episode 10.
Was that the last episode of the series?
That was the last one, yep. So it was a good feeling to get that one up. It was insane. I've never, you know, every time I get busy, I think, oh my gosh, this is like the craziest thing and the busiest I've ever been. And then somehow something comes along that tops it. And I just cannot imagine that there's going to be something crazier than this, because I swear the last 4 days, I never slept more than 3 hours, and I don't think ever at more than like an hour to 2 hour clip. So like, that's just stupid on my part, and I should have more people. But but at that point, it was like our crew had dwindled down. It's like we know the footage. It's like bringing in someone at this point is not going to help us, because they're going to have to learn everything. So I was like, we got to figure it out, and we just stayed up and did it. And I just don't think I'll put myself in a situation like that again, hopefully.
Right.
But who knows? I mean, when stuff starts going and you want to get it done and it's fun, and you just do it. You just do it and you don't sleep sometimes.
Would you do anything different next time?
I think I would just try to plan for more crew. That's all. Right. Or editors, at least.
Gotcha. You know?
I would also try to ask for more time. It's like, can we have more time? I mean, if we could. But like, that had a deadline.
Right.
Like, the race was that day. That's not changing, you know? So
that's
hopefully
insane,
they just come sooner. But if someone drops something on you at the last second and you want to do it, like, I don't know. There's not much more you can do besides add more people, you know?
The other day, we're watching, what was it? One of the NFL preseason games. And one of my friends made a comment on how the fact that, you know, we're watching this game, and when they're about to go into commercials, they're showing a highlight of what just happened, right? Like this whole drive. The drive that we just saw, and you know football, so the drive that we just saw, they have a whole highlight sequence already.
Yep.
Before we go to commercial.
Yep.
And my friend made a comment like, man, these guys are working fast. Like, how do they get that so fast?
So,
like, man, somebody's having a bad day over there.
Well, like, let me tell you about that, because I've done some TV work and I understand how that works now. And I didn't understand how it works. I would think the same thing. Like, holy crap, how do they get that done? So.
Yeah.
There's machines called EVS machines, like EVS operators, which is the kind of like the replay guys. They're the ones that can slow it down and like when they request replays. So all this stuff gets captured on this EVS machine.
Sure.
And they can clip it like as it goes. So if they know they like that, they can kind of store it away real quick. And these machines are nothing like we work on. Like they're like these little, there's like a lever and like a circular thing, and there's like just buttons.
Right.
If we looked at it, there's no way we could operate it. Like, you'd have to learn this thing. And, like, even on screen, it's, like, old school. It's just lines. Like, every slot is numbered, and they, like, know where they put stuff. And they put it in slot 101, and, like, they just know what's there. It's, like, they label it real quick, but, I mean, they're just throwing things everywhere. And they kind of, I'm sure over time, they start grouping things. Like maybe it's like all of their like great catches are in like the 100s, and then the best throws are in the 102s or whatever, however they organize in their head. They just start throwing these things into these banks. And then they're able to pull them out really fast and put these cuts together through this machine. And I mean, I'm telling you, it's nothing like you've ever seen. Like we wouldn't be able to operate it. And they cut it up real fast. But like they're literally taking these things as they do them. So as they see them and they're like, oh, this could make the reel, they kind of throw it into a bank.
Yeah,
so,
they have to and do that in real time.
They do it in real time, and then they put it together really fast. They're crazy good with this thing. So it's actually so not as difficult as something we'd have to do.
Right. Believe it or not. But like, no, can you imagine taking that footage? Even if they're grabbing the stream direct, you know, like there's no dumping or anything like that. It would still be really hard to just edit clips like that.
It's hard to like put something nice together, but they are able to like – it records nonstop. So like if they literally just can mark it in and out and throw it in a bank and they have that catch from this angle and that angle, like ready to go, you know, and then they can pull it into their timeline or whatever they put together. So
that's insane.
It's nothing like if you're thinking like, oh my God, how do they do that in Premiere that fast and export it? Like it's not how it works. Yeah. But it's still insane how quick they do it. But I was like blown away.
I'm also
when I saw
thinking
it.
How I've had to work the CrossFit games and all that stuff. Like we have to do that stuff real fast.
Yeah. But yeah, the stream into the truck that's like pulling these full res things at, you know, recording nonstop. They have high end stuff machines that are making these things work. So it's a little bit easier than you might think, but still pretty cool how they do it. It's a really cool thing to watch because they just like it's just this. It's a different. It's like a different language type.
Yeah, broadcast is such a different world, man.
It is.
That's why when I tell people, like, I've had a couple of people tell me, "Hey, this broadcast station is auctioning off all their gear," and I'm like, cool, I'll take a look at it, but I doubt I'm going to find anything that I like because I don't do broadcast. Those, you know, those cameras, it's just a completely different type of world environment, you know?
Completely different.
Now, tell me about delivering. So how did you deliver the products? Like, and what was the platform that they were placed in?
So they pushed them out on Fox Sports online. So they pushed straight up on their platform. They would also put it on YouTube, and the other place it delivered it was on Twitter, actually, which was a pain for us because again, with an average of 10 minutes on these files, some of them were over 10 minutes, obviously, if we're averaging 10 minutes. So the ones that were over had to have a secondary cut for Twitter because Twitter is maximum 10 minutes, which was a huge pain. Wow. So we had to figure out how to cut something out.
Direct
to Twitter, which I didn't know people would watch that much on Twitter, but I guess they do.
Is that one of those things that they can only do from their phone?
I don't know. I don't know how they. I don't know how they physically did it, but
right.
They put them on Twitter for sure. Like you just watch straight up, like in your timeline, click on it, it opens up.
And is 16:9?
16:9. Anything I sent to them, I was doing them in ProRes and they were accepting that and they had no problem even though they were putting them online. And then there came a point where we had to render faster because we were pushing the deadlines. And so I started rendering like one pass H.264s instead because we had to get them out and they had no problem with that. So we gave them anything from ProRes to H.264 and it was all fine. However, we did the race itself. The Centennial race was streamed live to a platform that people could pay for that weren't at the event. And in the rain delay and things like that, they were using the dock and airing it on the stream. So I had to also render out a copy that was a ProRes interlaced at 30 frames a second for them to use. So
because they were streaming it. Because you have to give them, it can't be progressive. It has to be interlaced.
Yep. So
I've heard about. We had so to it was like a, that out. Was it like a 60i or something
it was,
like that?
Well, at first I was doing 60i because I thought that was where it should have been, but it was actually 30i.
30i.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not good at explaining this, but like interlaced is like either. Every other line is captured, and then every other line is captured. Progressive, it like scans them all in order and
all the right.
Which, gotcha. You know, you can see it when you watch things on TV sometimes.
Is it,
you,
Right.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes. Sometimes. It's like a random, like, bad feed or something. You can see, like, every other line, like, a little offset. That's the interlace. You can probably grab a screenshot somewhere. But.
Yeah. This is broadcast jargon, so I'm not...
I mean, it's very rare that I have to deal with it. But so
the only reason I even know that is because of my church, and we do the live stream and all that stuff. So. Yeah.
As far as another format, though, is we're going to have to put them on DVD, which we'll be doing next week. So I don't even know yet what that's going to have to be. I know from past experiences that I've had to render things for DVD at, like...
People still do DVDs?
Well, you know what, dude? In this world of dirt track modified racing, like, people, they're asking for it. Yeah, they're old school. They're like, man, I'd love to have a DVD of this. Like, so they want to create some DVDs to sell, because their big event, that Eastern States event, is coming up at the end of October. So they're going to sell them at the race, and they're going to sell them at some of the auto shops that these people go to, and they love it. So, yeah, we're going to be putting it on DVD, which I think is like something like 480, like 480p is what you got to put on a DVD, which I don't understand how that really works, and it looks fine on your TV. But
I mean, at what level, and I never got to figure this out, because I mean, when I was messing with DVDs and doing video work, it was very minimal. The DVD era was pretty much over at that point, so I didn't get to mess with it too much. How would you put high quality? Is it Blu-ray?
No, it's going to be a DVD. Blu-ray, I think Blu-ray does hold a higher quality, like, dimensions-wise, like, resolution-wise, but it also holds a lot more size. So, like, a DVD is, like, I don't know. I'm completely guessing here, but I know it's something like 4.6 gigabytes something, whereas a Blu-ray is, like, 25 gigabytes per side if you were to do, like, a dual-sided DVD or Blu-ray. So that's why I think the files are smaller, but they still look, I mean, on a, you know, unless you're running, I guess, a 4K screen, it still looks fine.
Sure.
So I don't know. I got to figure that out. Actually, I got to get the specs soon to make sure I'm doing that right. Yeah. So maybe next time we can talk about that. But
and you have, I assume you have 10 master files now that you would have to.
Yeah.
That you're working with, right?
Yep. That's exactly.
Super interesting.
And hopefully we can just kind of do a transcode. I guess that would be the right word, right? Like, hopefully I could just throw them into Media Encoder and output them in the right dimensions. I think that'll work.
Right.
But I'll find out.
Adobe's so good with all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I think for DVDs, they have that program called Encore.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. I've used that before back in the day. Is it still around?
It's not in the Creative Cloud. I'm not aware of.
Yeah, I'm not going to physically print the DVDs. I'm just going to give the people the files to make sure it's done right, because I'm not messing that one up. So we'll pay for that.
You don't do DVDs.
Yeah, I've done them in the past, like, on a very small scale, but I think they're trying to print hundreds. So,
Wow. Yeah,
I'm not up for that.
Oh, man. Hey, man, so we have a question. I didn't want to interrupt you before. We have a question from a Sebastian Martos asking, when will you be come back to YouTube?
Talking filmmaker. To me, I guess. Man.
Yeah, that's for you, man.
I would love to. I'm debating it, and I'm working on it. I wouldn't say I'm working on it as, like, physically making episodes, but I'm working on a plan. Hopefully, work on my end continues to do what it's doing, and I continue to grow the company and all that, which is, like, obviously my main goal and what I love doing. If I could build a little bit of a team around doing YouTube stuff, which I'd like to do over time, I would get back on there. But right now it's impossible for me to do it myself.
Yeah.
Which I did for that year, and it was a great experience, and I loved putting stuff
out
there like
that.
It's just too much of a time consumer, and you know how it is when it comes to, like, making the videos as opposed to just audio stuff. It's almost a full-time job if you're going to do it at that level. And I can't do two full-time jobs. That's impossible. So, but I'm getting there where I'm able to, like, hopefully staff some people or build a team that can help me do that. And I'd love to do that. That would be cool. So hopefully sometime next year I'll figure that out, but I can't make any promises. So.
Of course. What have you seen new this year that interests you in terms of gear?
You know, I am the worst with gear right now. I have not.
You haven't been caught up?
I'm not caught up. My buddy, I hear from you or I hear from a couple other buddies, like what they're interested in. Sure. And that's the most I know right now, to be honest with you. What I have has been working for the jobs I need.
Sure.
And I haven't had to kind of get out there and get more stuff. I've really gotten to a point where everything I have works for me. And if not, I'll just go rent something. Sure. But I've heard about this, the new Ursa. I keep hearing about the new pocket cam too, which I still don't like the way those cameras work. Blackmagic's cameras like actually operate. I don't like the, as stupid as this sounds, like I like the Sony menus as rudimentary as they are. Like I still like them, man. I still like how simple they are, even though they're complex to get into. I know where everything is at this point.
I hate them so much. I really do.
And maybe with the DNG Cinema DNG Lite, I am not sure if it's recording. Is that what it is? The DNG files are huge, but I think there's a Lite form now, and I'm not sure.
Don't tell me that. If
there is, it'd be awesome. But I don't know if that's true.
I don't think.
If not, those files are huge. Images are great,
man. But yeah, the Cinema DNG files are ridiculous. Yeah. You're good. You're better off just.
But there's also a new Lumix too. That looks really interesting.
S1H.
That I don't know much about.
Yeah, the Panasonic S1H, my last episode, no, two episodes ago was about, well, if you include this one, I did it on that camera only just because that is probably, this is the second time I think that Panasonic has really rocked the industry.
Right.
With a release like this. The first time was the release of the GH4. Mm-hmm. The release of the GH4 was, it rocked it in the sense that it was the first time a SLR camera has 4K like that.
Yeah.
And then this one now is 6K and it's full frame and it's just ridiculous. It has vents inside of it so you can do continuous 6K nonstop. There is no record limit.
Have you been able to, have you played with it yet?
No. At this point, like it's hard to justify new purchases.
That's kind of why I've gotten away from stuff as far as even researching.
Yeah, because
everything's working, it's going great, and I don't need to do that right now. So I'm sure at some point I'll have to get back into it, but it's ridiculous. Insane.
But yeah, dude, thanks so much for sharing your experience. You have other things in the works as well. What can you say, if anything, on other projects that you're working on? Be careful.
I can say that working on another docuseries been working on since January, that's going to hit a pretty big platform. I can't even say which one that is because I don't even think it's confirmed yet. That's about it. I can say that you helped me on it at one point. It's coming together. It's far into the post-production process.
Sure.
It's a lot of revisions and
just
time consuming on that part of it. Yeah. But, hopefully it's done soon and gets out there publicly. I really don't think it'll be out. I don't think it will be out till next year, to be honest with you. I don't think it'll be out till early next year. Which is a bummer because I think some of it's time sensitive, but we'll see. That's not up to me. Yeah. I'm more on the production side of it. I'm not at all on the distribution side of it. So that is what it is. I can't control that. So, but when it does get out there, we can talk a lot more about it because that's a big process, and you were involved a little bit too. So you get to we can kind of both talk on it a little bit. So
definitely,
that's that. I mean, I have a few other things that are like we would love to get into production with that we've like either made, I guess you want to call it a trailer or a teaser for, and trying to sell a couple things. Other than that, it's the same old corporate stuff. So nothing super interesting to even talk about. But you know, it's still work.
Gonna try to make it back on the show more often or what?
I'd love to, man.
With this easier format.
Yeah, definitely. Hit me up whenever you want something new to talk about. Yeah. Obviously, don't talk to me about gear right now, but if it's something else, as far as production, we can definitely
totally. Talk on it. Well, remind the audience where they can find you, your recent docuseries.
At Jersey Filmmaker on all the platforms, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, Jersey Filmmaker. As far as finding the docuseries, I think it's probably easiest to find it on Facebook. I think it's the easiest to find it all in one place. If you go to Facebook and then go to NASCAR on Fox, so NASCAR actually also picked it up, and it's nice. Hosted. It's hosted in one place. Like the whole series is under. There's actually a series tab on Facebook, which is pretty cool. And then if you click on it, it brings up the whole playlist. So anyway, sure. Facebook, go to NASCAR on Fox, and then go to their series tab, and you'll see OCFS, which is Orange County Fair Speedway, 100 years. You can't miss it. Click on that, and it brings up all 10 episodes. That's the easiest place to find them all in one spot. You can also search it on YouTube if you really wanted, Orange County Fair Speedway, 100 years. They'll pop up. You could probably go to their their page and find it. It's all over the place. It's not in one place, but you can try any of those.
Phenomenal. Dude, thanks so much for stopping by and sharing all that information. I think that a lot of people are going to find, including myself, found it very, very valuable. So
cool,
appreciate that, man.
Yeah.
We'll have you on the next one.
Absolutely.
Later, bud.
All right, later.